your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
David Britton, are you there?
I am here.
What's up, mate? How's it going?
Not too bad. How are you, Big Hungry?
Probably not so bad as well, actually, if I stopped and thought about it.
Yeah, well, you got to stop every now and again, I guess.
Stop and have a look up as well. Have a little
look up. That's a good place to look.
Have a little reminder of your puny little self and carry on with your day.
Exactly.
What's going on up there, anyway?
Well, up there is probably the appropriate term because I've never done this before, but I'm starting off with three obituaries.
Oh wow!
Yeah, Katherine Johnson, the African American woman who was the main character in the movie Hidden Figures.
Yes.
She has died. She was 101.
Ah, bloody yeah. Good news that one.
So she was one of the women who was they were called human computers. So in those days they didn't have computers that could do the job. So they had people to crunch the numbers for space flight, for engineering problems and so on.
Right.
So the movie highlighted the problems at that time in the 1960s. I mean, one of them, of course, was segregation was still a law, and so when these African-American women needed to go to the loo, they couldn't just go to the closest one. They had to go to the one that was designated for them, and in that case, it was half a mile away.
Mm.
And when she was queried about where did she disappear to instead of working by her boss, she said, well, I'm just going to the toilet, and that's the toilet I have to go to.
Yep.
You sort of forget about those times, I guess.
Yeah, it's heavy, crazy times.
Yeah. The second person, not quite so up there. He got to about half a kilometre. That's the guy Mad Mike Hughes, the guy who is a supporter of the Flat Earth ideas.
Right.
I can't believe you. A couple of years ago, he launched himself on a steam-powered rocket that got to about 400 metres or so.
Okay.
It didn't quite land as he wanted, but he was okay if you sort of heard vertebrae and so on. But unfortunately, he kept on going. He wanted to get higher. And this time, the thing is, when astronauts go up, they don't land with their craft. The space shuttle's the only one that's ever done that.
Yeah.
There's a good reason for it. And this guy didn't learn that lesson, and his parachute was attached to the whole craft, not just to where he was.
I see.
And as he took off the parachute, I don't know if it got tangled or disengaged somehow, but basically as it lifted off, the parachute started billowing behind.
Oh, no.
And so, yeah.
He would have known pretty early then that this was going to turn out bad.
Yeah, it turned out real bad. Oh, so, yeah, he died in that. So he was 64 years
but
old.
Apparently it wasn't a mission to prove the Flat Earth theory.
That's right. That's right. I mean, he was a supporter of the Flat Earth theory, but this... he realized that going up in a rocket this high, I mean, if he could go to a mountain this higher than he was flying.
Yeah.
To see if the Earth was curved or not. And now he just wanted to push the boundaries as far as homemade rockets went.
Yep.
And because you're allowed to do that in the United States, he did.
How many of these kinds of deaths have we had on record? Is it relatively new because private sort of rocketeering is kind of kicking off, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, other people have done various things, but he just sort of went a little bit further.
Yeah.
And I think basically, as I said, it's because he could, and, you know, he was a bit of a daredevil.
Yeah, okay.
He set the Guinness World Record in 2002 for the longest limousine jump.
Did he now? You've done some good research.
That makes no sense at all.
I did not know that.
You mean like over...
jumping a limousine.
Did he jump it over normal cars? Or?
He jumped a Lincoln Town Car stretch limo 31 metres.
I feel like I could beat that.
Or I'll make a joke about not being stretched when he landed this time. Anyway.
Fair enough.
The third person, a lady called Heather Cooper. She was a broadcaster, an astronomer, a science communicator. She died at the age of 70. She was British. She'd done a lot of programs on television over there especially. She wrote a couple of dozen books in association with Nigel Henbest, and they founded a film and TV production company to promote science, and especially science. She's also the first female president of the British Astronomical Association. So, I mean, she's not really right up there compared with some people like, the next person I'm going to mention, but she actually visited New Zealand a couple of times, and I went to a lecture she gave in Epsom in 1995.
Wow.
She's very enthusiastic about science, and that came across to the audience. You know, she really did get the message across, and at that time, they were here promoting a book called The Guide to the Galaxy, so it's about the Milky Way. Yeah, so sorry to hear that she had passed away after a short illness. Mm. And one I didn't mention to you in my email is Freeman Dyson has also died at the age of 96. He's the guy, he's a physicist and a mathematician. He came up with far-fetched ideas like what's called the Dyson Sphere, which an advanced civilization down in the future would crunch up all the leftover planets and asteroids and form a shell around the parent star.
Whoa.
So you would not waste any sunlight.
Okay.
You'd use all of that. So it's called a Dyson Sphere. He also came up with a Dyson Tree. And the idea of that was you could genetically engineer trees that could grow on comets.
Wow.
And that would provide habitats for genetically altered humans who would live on those comets. So anyway, a bit of a visionary, along with his physics and mathematics, Freeman Dyson. Yeah.
All right. Well, a bunch of RIPs.
A bunch of RIPs, that's right.
Fair enough.
Now, David, in other space news, we're firing heaps of private satellites up into orbit. How do we take care of these while they're flying around in space?
Would you say willy-nilly, John?
Well, I mean, there's lots of private satellites in space. I mean, most of the communication satellites, Sky TV use, and et cetera, internet and so on, that's all privately owned, and they are in an orbit about 36,000 kilometres high where it takes 24 hours for them to go around the Earth, which means, as far as we're concerned, they stay above the same point of the equator, which is why they're there. When they get old, they're pushed up to a higher orbit. It's sort of a graveyard orbit, it's called, and that slot in the that circle around the Earth is then taken over by a replacement satellite, which is a bit of a waste, really. A big waste, because that satellite that's spent millions of dollars is just sitting up there in the graveyard orbit forever, basically. Mm. So what they've done now is come up with a satellite that will move satellites up to that higher orbit if needed, but also they could take fuel up and refuel the satellite so it has a longer life, or even do repairs. And so the first stage for that was to actually get a satellite to go up and dock with one of those satellites.
Mm.
Now, remember, that's now two objects about the size of a car or a minivan and 36,000 kilometres above our heads orbiting around the Earth. So to actually manoeuvre them together like that is pretty amazing. And, of course, the one that the target satellite, you don't want to interfere with it because it's still working. It's still providing whatever it's doing for the people on Earth. So that's the first step to be able to do that in the more...
With all the satellites being fired up, are they standardized in design? Because I can imagine there might be a few different propulsion and fuel systems for every single satellite.
Well, I think a lot of them are only like the size of a little dog, right?
Well, the ones that are in geosynchronous orbit, the big communications satellites and so on, the weather satellites, they're not that big.
Mm.
Again, at 36,000 kilometers, you have to have more radio power and et cetera, et cetera. And they're there to do a big job. I mean, they relay a lot of data. TV channels chew up a lot of data, so they have to be substantial. Now, the smaller ones tend to be lower orbits, and they can be brought back into the Earth's atmosphere and burn up much more easily.
Right.
36,000 kilometres, if you deorbit from there, you've got to then go through every orbit satellite between there and the atmosphere. And so you increase the risk of collisions.
Collision, yeah.
Yeah, that's why they move them to a higher orbit further away as the orbit, rather than bringing them down to burn up.
One day, are we going to have to design something that cleans up all the debunked satellites and stuff?
Well, some people are sort of working on that, but again, it's for low-Earth satellites, really.
Right.
There's like a grapple, a net. This is one thing to grab them and get hold of them.
Round them up.
Another one is to attach a tether, which can provide an extra momentum to deorbit them. If you sort of destroy them, they're going to break up into a million pieces, and then they're going to be a million pieces of danger to everything else.
Yeah.
So you want to keep them intact until they reach the atmosphere, if you can.
Is it true that even like a little fleck of paint up there could be dangerous to something, you know, travelling past?
Well, to an astronaut who's doing a spacewalk, yeah. All the helmets, the visors especially, are examined in minute detail, and they find these little impact craters, microscopic, on the visors and so on. The outside of things like the space station, that's designed to take a reasonable impact. But yeah, a flake of paint will do damage travelling at 8 to 10 kilometres per second. Mm. Definitely.
Interesting. Now, what's happening in the night sky at the moment, David?
The usual, I guess. We've got some planets after sunset. Well, the Venus is in the west after sunset in the morning. We've got Mars, Jupiter and Saturn over in the east. One thing to look out for is on the 9th and the 10th, that's Monday and Tuesday next week, we've got a supermoon. So after sunset over in the east, the moon will be rising, and it's at the closer part of its orbit while it's a full moon, so it looks a little bit bigger than normal. So it's got the moniker of supermoon, so it might be quite good for getting some nice photographs in the after sunset.
Superman. Cool. Someone's just texted in the word tractor beam, which is really nice. Like to read that. Thank you, texter. What's going on at the Stardome?
At Stardome, just remind people of children's shows. We have children's shows every weekend in the afternoon at 1 o'clock, 2, 3 and 4 o'clock. At the moment in March, the four shows that we have are The Little Star That Could. So that's a story about a star that's looking for planets to look after. Another one called Perfect Little Planet, which is, trying to find out where's the best place to live in the solar system. At 3 o'clock, Dinosaurs at Dusk. Mm. So that's a story about Lucy and her father traveling back in time, meeting different dinosaurs and finding out about what led to the last day of the dinosaurs. And at 4 o'clock, Looking Up. So that's a children's version of the Night Sky Show. So all these are in the planetarium. It's $12 for adults and $10 for children at Stardome. So you need to book at 624-1246, or you can book online at stardome.org.nz. All the information's up on the website.
All right, David Britton, thank you so much, mate. We appreciate your space chats and implore everyone to get along to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium, even though John and I haven't done that yet, and we feel guilty about it.
I've got a plan for you guys.
Have you?
Yeah.
I just want to go to the Pink Floyd / Led Zeppelin thing.
Something like that.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Okay, mate.
Catch you, buddy. Bye.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
I actually wanted to play a gig there, eh? That's what I want.
I feel like David was...